RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back to Green Justice and Arrow Podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. This week, Josh and I are going to cover the mid-season return. They've both been referred to as different things, and we'll answer such questions as, is Oliver Queen alive? What will his teammates do without him? And how do you get bloodstains out of a scimitar?
Oh,
so
you just—that's an ancient Chinese secret.
Oh gosh, they were Japanese, I believe, but that's okay. Anyway, so why don't you just go ahead and tell us about what this episode is?
Thank you. We'll come back.
I'm
sorry. I almost got left behind there. I'm sorry. We are going to talk about... Oh, look at that. The mid-season premiere return, Left Behind,
which is followed next week by Right Behind. And then, aren't you a little cheeky? So...
Please, I hope it is. now I want it to be.
You want it to be.
Left Behind was aired on January 21st, 2015. This was season 10 of episode 3, so we're not even halfway through.
Episode 10 of season 3.
No.
I would love it to be season 10, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now I have been left behind. I apologize. Let me recap.
Yes.
Season 3 of episode 10, whatever. You get
you know where we're at.
Yeah, you know where we're at. Not even halfway through. We've got plenty Arrow to come. But the writers would be so proud of my introduction here. Mark Guggenheim and Eric Olesen. And I apologize to them both. It was directed by Glenn Winter. I don't apologize to him because he owes me money. All right. So, after 5 years on a hellish island, I've been thrown off a cliff and killed. So, there you go. But, you know what? Oliver may be gone, / possibly dead, / missing, / he'll be back. We just have to be patient. But, you know what? In the meantime, Diggle, Roy, and Felicity can hold down the fort, or cave, or whatever. Well, actually, they're actually having a little trouble with that. They're having a hard time filling those green shoes. Because this thug named Danny Brickwell, he's got these big plans to free everyone that Oliver spent months catching and putting in prison. But in all honesty, all in all, he's just another brick in the Starling City. Because everyone's main concern is really Oliver's fate. Felicity's trying to hold out hope, but, you know, Malcolm Merlyn, he has a way of making you doubt yourself. When he produces this bloody and very unsanitary scimitar, Felicity wants to start protecting everyone from dying, including her heroically inspired boy toy, Ray Palmer. But hang on, everyone. Don't start counting the scimitar-stabbed chickens before they've hatched, because there's a mysterious figure with a debt to our fallen hero, and he just may be the key to his return.
Ooh, interesting. So, well, some interesting things to discuss here. The episode moved along a little bit differently than I foresaw it in my brain. So we'll get into talking about that in just a second. But before we do, let's just first congratulate Arrow on being renewed for its fourth season. We're going to get a fourth year of this show, which is amazing. And by the time we get to the fifth year, we're gonna not know what to do with ourselves. They're just going to be doing so many different cool things, hopefully. I'm glad to hear that we'll be getting at least one more year of Oliver's forgetfulness. It's like, oh yeah, well, I was on the island mostly for 5 years, except when I was in Hong Kong, and oh, by the way, I was also on the moon. I just didn't, I forgot to tell you about that. And it'll be Arrow
the
in
Arrow
space.
Episode where he's on the moon. That's going to be like season 11. Well, congratulations on the fourth season. What I love is that it's not slowing down. It's just picking up momentum. It's getting better reviews, better word of mouth, and better ratings from what I hear as it goes through these seasons. So congratulations, and I am extremely excited. Hopefully he will recover more quickly than I would from a chest wound.
Yeah, hopefully.
That was
not that I hope that you get a chest wound or anything like that. I mean, not suggesting
okay. Well,
that.
It was either that or you didn't think Stephen Amell is any stronger than I am. I don't. I you know what? We go to the same gym, and really, it's all makeup. It's just shading.
You both know that we are not turning that room into a gym, so.
Here's my challenge to Stephen Amell. Yeah. He needs to come and take a picture next to me. We'll both be topless, and I'll prove to you. I will prove to you that that is all makeup. Either that, or I'll have a really, really, really awesome picture to post on Facebook. So.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. Well, let's hope that happens. So
I hope so, too. He was he's back on social media. He was kind of – Not taking a break, but he wasn't on it as much as he was. And he had mentioned that he really wanted to be on Jimmy Kimmel. And he was. Just very recently, he made an appearance on the Kimmel Show. That's what you call it, right? The Kimmel Show? They call it Kimmel? Like they call it Carson? Or what? What do they do?
I don't know. I don't stay up that late anymore.
I know. I'm too old to stay up that late. But I mentioned it for just a couple of reasons. One is because it was a fun appearance. He even played a game with a guy from Modern Family, Eric. I can't remember his name. Eric something. He plays Cam on Modern Family. But they played the game, guess that thing or something. He lost, but it was close.
Steven lost?
Steven lost, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it was really close. But he told kind of a cool story about his breakthrough in acting. He got his first acting role. He got a call from his agent for his first acting role while he was sitting in the audience of Kimmel.
Oh, wow.
He actually got a call on his cell phone from his agent while he was watching Jimmy Kimmel. And I guess he told a story about how you can't use cell phones while you're in the audience. Then there's like security guards that will escort you out if you even pick up your cell phone. So he got the call, didn't answer it, but then stepped out right as Flo Rida, or is that how you say singer? Right as Flo Rida was doing their act, so he would get the call from his agent and ended up getting the job. So that led to him obviously becoming Oliver Queen. So
awesome.
I just thought that was an interesting story.
That's really cool. Well, we might actually be seeing Oliver Queen on another show on the CW, but not quite. There is a – I know this is –
This sounds like a great story.
It's a great story. It's a horrible transition.
Okay.
There is an online portion of the CW called CW Seed, which has original online content. And there is –
I'm not going to tell you what that sounds like to me.
So – there is a animated series that is going to be coming later this year in 2015 called Vixen, which is based on a DC superheroine.
Oh yeah, superheroine. Yes.
Who is a character that was originally in the Justice League? She's got kind of mystical powers, but it takes place in the same universe as Arrow and the Flash, and the promo art for the series has her character first and foremost right up in front there, but Arrow and the Flash are standing behind her. So there's a good chance that they might appear in these animated shows, voiced by Grant Gustin and Stephen Amell. So I think that'd be kind of cool.
That'd be very cool. And he's voicing Oliver in another animated type way.
Yeah.
That's fun too.
Yeah, the Lego Batman 3 downloadable content. You get to play an island level with Oliver Queen and Slade Wilson and a whole bunch of other characters from the show. Looks really fun. I haven't downloaded it yet, but I'm really I'm strongly leaning towards getting that.
Is it just my you know, overzealous fan desire, or does it seem like Stephen Amell is just having a blast with this character?
Oh, I think he is. I mean, I think he's as much of a fan as any of us, which is good because, you know, it's not just one of those jobs that actors get where they could, you know, they're good at it, but they could kind of care less about it. I mean, he really puts himself into this role. He cares about the fans. Like you said, he was off social media for a while there, but he's interacting, I think, with his fans every day on mostly on Facebook, but on Twitter as well, and uses us for, you know, great causes too, which
right.
I think is really neat.
Yeah, and he gets excited about it and knows that he has that influence and has done, you know, supported charity causes before, and he has just recently launched his newest charity cause, which is actually supporting two different charities this time. And I'll tell you about the charities first, and then I'll kind of tell you what you can do to help these. The first one is called Paws and Stripes, and it is a charity that I guess helps veterans and dogs, and it kind of pairs them up. I guess like shelter dogs,
okay.
And it kind of pairs them up to help them get over trauma and. You know, help them make transitions back into, I don't want to say society, doesn't sound like the right word, but, you know, just into
everyday life. Yeah.
Everyday life. Yeah. Both the dogs and the veterans. So, it sounded like a good cause. It sounded like a smaller cause, which he was really interested in helping the little smaller causes. And, you know, speaking of smaller causes, the other one that he's supporting, is one called, Stand for the Silent. And it's more of a bullying charity, you know, that kind of helps people to understand the dangers and how to deal with bullying and things like that. So
that's great.
You can find out more about it on Steven's Facebook page, and you'll find some links to both Stand for the Silent and Paws and Stripes. But the way you help that is you buy another shirt, and it is – it's a little different this time, and I think some of this came from his social media interaction, but it's got a picture of Stephen Amell on it with his word, sincerely. And I think he came up with this word himself or is using it more after hearing it or something. But sincerely apparently is an adverb, which is the ability to speak freely, openly, and honestly about anything or to initiate any action while spreading as much good karma as possible. And that definitely sounds like Stephen Amell, because
that's great.
He really likes to help others with his influence. The shirt itself is $26. All I have seen is the baseball style shirt, I guess.
Yeah, they have t-shirts and hoodies, it looks like, as well.
Oh, do they? Okay. Yeah. Well, the link I just took to the baseball ones, but I guess, yeah, you can probably change those. So,
yep.
And a variety of different colors. It's $26. It looks like you've got about, let's see, from the time this goes out, you got a few days left to order this, and this campaign will help those two charities out. So
that's great.
Check it out.
That's great. I'm really glad that he's involved in those kind of things. It makes you feel good that, you know, he is taking such a stand for a lot of good causes. And
yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of other actors that do this kind of stuff, maybe not to this degree, because he seems to choose some smaller charities, like you're saying here. So congratulations to Steven, and hope this charity run goes as well as the last one, which I think raised over, I don't know, I want to say it was like over $1 million, I think he did. And he just yeah. wanted to raise like 20,000 or something like that. So,
and if it all goes well, maybe that picture of him and me standing topless can go on a shirt too, and we can sell that for charity.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I think you're getting ahead of yourself. But okay.
You're writing it down right now, right? To order one right away.
Yep.
I can tell.
Yep. Order the shirt. Get Josh checked out. Okay. All right, so let's get into talking about Left Behind here, which is the first episode back from the winter break. And so on our last episode of Green Justice, we were talking about, obviously, the apparent death of Oliver Queen, and how's he going to get out of this one? And I know that you were thinking that Oliver was not going to play a prominent part in upcoming stories, or, you know, for a few episodes here at least, to give the other characters a chance to shine. And I thought that they would even maybe go as far as keeping Oliver completely out of the picture except for flashbacks, you know, for, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes or something like that. Obviously, I don't think we've that they're doing that exactly, because we do see Oliver in this one and not just in flashbacks. But what they did do was give the other characters a, you know, a chance to shine in the spotlight, or at least to not necessarily shine, but to have the focus on them.
Yeah, I think what it did is it kind of put them on a different track for their future. You know, it's like they were going one direction with Oliver. They were all kind of, and it was kind of a good, smooth track. You know what I mean? Fighting crime, and I mean, it was tough, but it was working. And now they've been derailed off of that, and all of them seem to be going in a very unknown, different direction.
Well, yeah, and it starts in the episode with them just kind of continuing on, like I would almost imagine they're continuing on with the momentum from having Oliver there. You know, it's only been, 3 or 4 days, I think, since they had heard from him, or since he had gone off to fight Ra's al Ghul. So, you know, they're doing the best they can. Diggle's putting on the hood, which... I just wish he'd put on a mask, too, I guess. I don't know.
I cannot imagine him trying to squeeze into that thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, you know, Stephen Amell is a pretty big, muscular guy, but I don't know.
There was a piece
He's
of fan
a
art.
A lot
that,
bigger.
Yeah, there's a piece of fan art that Stephen posted on his Facebook page of Diggle wearing the green outfit, and it's like riding up his waist, and it's, you know, the pants are coming up, and it's just not fitting him very well, and he's like, I squeezed into it the best I could, you know, which I totally agree with you. I'm not sure that it would actually fit Diggle, just because he is a bigger guy. I mean, it's just
well, and I think they realized that and they kind of made a light of it later on in the episode, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah. But then when the team realizes that Oliver may not be coming back, and then when, you know, they finally get confirmation that he's dead, the whole team just seems to break up so quickly. And I guess, like, first off here, since I'm taking the title of the episode Left Behind as, you know, short for those left behind, you know, kind of basically it's tough for Oliver to be in the situation that he's in right now, you know, being dead and all. But
yeah, that is kind of rough.
Yeah. But it's also hard for the people that get left behind. You know, that's one of the, there's a saying about that. And so what do you think about what the team is doing in his absence, and the, you know, what they're trying to, you know, continue on doing? Is that the right thing? I mean, should they be continuing to fight without him as their leader? Is that
I
proper?
I think it's very proper. As a matter of fact, I was kind of thrown off a little bit by how much they were struggling with it. And it seemed to me like they were kind of after the same goal as him. Maybe not quite as obsessed at times, but it seemed like they were, you know, kind of hoping to do similar things with him. So whether he was there or not, I would have thought they would have continued. Although I do think they really progressed in a way in this episode that explained why maybe they did kind of give it up. They were ready to sort of walk away. Mostly Felicity, I guess, mm-hmm. was the catalyst for that.
Right.
But I don't know. I was a little surprised that especially Diggle, And Roy, too, because the whole point of Roy getting into vigilantism was because, you know, Oliver saved him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because he could work with Oliver. He tried to do it on his own before.
Well, yeah, that's true. When the Canary came to town, right, because that's when he was being his own kind of vigilante and then realized mm-hmm. that he couldn't quite do it the same way. I guess what I was interested in seeing is that I kind of thought everybody else had a little bit more stake in the team than they apparently do, or that they chose to show, at least in this episode. You know, everybody, I think it's easy to follow Oliver, right? He's a very strong, strong individual and a strong willed individual. He knows what he wants to do, and he actually does more than the team allows him to do because they are actually holding him back. And again, I think Felicity is the catalyst for that as well. But I felt that, you know, Diggle had a real stake in the team, and Roy did as well. And Felicity, now she's had some problems because of the personal interactions between her and Oliver. So, you know, she's, you know, well, we were talking about maybe two episodes ago where I thought she'd actually left the team to go work for Palmer, but
mm-hmm.
she's still working with him, but it's just, you know, it's kind of off again, on again. We're not sure. But in this episode, you know, as soon as they realize that Oliver's really gone, it's like their boat has no rudder. I mean, Diggle is, he was freaking out. I mean, and I think that's how Diggle freaks out. It's not like he was completely hysterical, but, you know, he's talking to Roy. He's like, I can only see what's an inch in front of my face. You know, like, I can't see beyond this, and I just have to keep focusing on this. Otherwise, like, he's going to lose it. And, you know, Roy, same kind of thing. Like, Roy's really come into his own. He's out there, you know, taking guys down on Oliver's motorcycle and doing all this stuff. And then, boom, oh, Oliver's gone. It's like, yeah, and I don't know. I mean, you know, they just lost Sarah, like Felicity had said, you know, just like 3 months ago or whatever they were talking about. Or was it three? Yeah, I guess it was like she was saying like 3 months ago.
Yeah, that's about right.
And I guess I shouldn't expect the team to just kind of carry on as though nothing else happened, but...
Well, why not? I mean, because they really don't know, at least at first, they don't know where he is, what happened to him. Why wouldn't you? I mean, because
I think they were doing fine up to that point, but then as soon as Merlin said he's dead, and Laurel has a terrific point. I mean, I thought this was some of the best written Laurel stuff that we've seen in a while, because she was being very pertinent to the episode. She basically, like, snapped him out of it. It's like, why are we even listening to Malcolm Merlyn? Who gives a crap what this guy has to say, and why should we believe him? But, you know, that moment when they find out that Oliver is dead, right, because he's brought the scimitar in, they've checked it all out, boom. I mean, the team just implodes. Mm-hmm. And I can see everybody needing to take the time for themselves or as a group, you know, to grieve about the loss of their friend.
Sure.
But, I mean, I would think they would at least be like, well, we need to keep this team going, you know, to honor him or something along those lines. But
yeah, I'm with you. I was a little shocked. And I think Felicity really, like I said, she was kind of the key. She is a huge, huge part of their success. You know, she probably wouldn't say she was, but
right.
I don't know that they could have done a lot of the stuff that they've done without her, and she really isn't strong like them. I mean, she's got her strengths, but, you know, she's your average person. She's
right.
emotional, and she struggles with that stuff. So once she kind of broke down, which I think is very typical, that would be normal. I would probably do that.
Yeah. Oh, and it's appropriate. I mean,
appropriate, yes,
yeah,
for sure.
Right.
And I think they, I don't know. I still think they probably would have tried to do something, if probably not to the same capacity that they were doing before. But I think they need her if they're going to be taking down these big bad guys. I mean, they clearly couldn't even do it without her. And she prevented them from doing it. So, I don't know. I think because she stopped them, that was one of the reasons they were, I don't want to say giving up, but just changing their perspective.
Do you think that was appropriate of her to stop them? No. To stop Roy and Dig?
You say appropriate. You know, I mean, that's hard to say. Yeah, I mean, she was trying to protect her friends. From a hero's point of view, no. I mean, she should have just...
Because they let
trusted
the bad...
in their abilities,
right? Because they let the bad guy get away, right? So
yeah,
hmm.
Yeah. That it was kind of a complex situation, and it was weird how they handled it. But I don't know that it necessarily was wrong. I could see it going that way, but it wasn't where I would have expected the characters to go.
Yeah. Well, it was. I thought it was an interesting. Character arc for these individuals. I'm assuming that this will continue. The producers have talked about how the first three episodes back here are going to form their own small trilogy because there was so much material that they wanted to cover with the people of Starling City, the characters in Starling City, that they just couldn't do it all in this one episode. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of this. Because I think there's more to the grieving process than what we're seeing. And I think what we've gotten is that immediate reaction. And, you know, we need to get into some of the, you know, longer term effects of that. And, I mean, we've already seen what it did to Laurel. I mean, it's kind of, it's broken up this core team, but it's taken Laurel and it's driven her to, you know, where we've kind of known she's going to go for a while here, but putting on her sister's costume and going out and becoming Black Justice.
So Black Justice, is that her name? The
promos are Black. What is it? Justice is the New Black, I think is what they're,
yeah,
their new.
I kind of like that. Actually. But I do want to ask you real quickly, how'd you like that transition? Was it too quick for you or did it work?
For Laurel?
Yeah.
Other than the fact that I was kind of questioning why is all of Sarah's stuff just still laying on the table here like this, you know, like, I mean, if it's been 3 months and they, I think they kind of answered the questions. Well, they would have been answering the questions just like 3 or 4 days ago. So I guess they could have still had the stuff out.
Well, I took it as they left it out as a memento, you know, to honor her. It was almost like Not a trophy. A trophy sounds bad, but
memorial.
You know, a memorial. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, I didn't see it as that. I'm not sure. Again, I'm not really sure how I saw it, but no, I thought that kind of worked for me because they gave. We saw what Laura was up against. She was working within the legal system. And, you know, the other lawyer and the judge and stuff were like, you know, you need to produce the arrow. And she's like, nope, we got a gun with fingerprints on it, right? So she's really working within the system. She's trying to do good in the way that she knows how. And then everything changes and Brickwell, you know, steals all of these, all this evidence back, causing all the hard work that she's done putting these people behind bars to just go up in a puff of smoke. So she knows that Oliver is not there now to help with this. And, you know, it's like, well, I don't think she has very much choice. I mean, that's kind of how I took it. And, you know, there was some good shots of her there. She's kind of looking it over and we don't see what she does with it right away. You know, I think it takes a couple, like couple scenes for us to get back to her showing up there. But I, you know, I thought that was an appropriate way to bring that transition around. I didn't have a huge problem with it. Something I had been expecting. So
I will be honest with you. I did not have as much problem with it as I thought I was going to.
Oh, okay.
I actually kind of liked it.
Good. Well,
yeah, I'm sure we'll talk more about that in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, it sounds like she's going to be doing a little, we are going to be seeing more of her vigilantism here in the next few episodes as she fights for Starling City. So that'll be
well, and you, in all fairness, you were talking about what some of the things we were predicting last time when we had our last show, mm-hmm. and you were saying something about Laurel and where she was going in the future, what you thought was going to happen, and I just totally interrupted you and cut you off. And so you never really got to finish your full thought about Laurel. I think you were going pretty much
no
here.
Idea.
Where
yeah, probably. I have no idea what I was going to say.
So I apologize. Yeah, sorry about that.
Well, thank you. I will not shout in your ear and rupture your eardrums then. So, as I think we both discussed on that last episode, we figured that the flashbacks would continue, and they did, in Hong Kong. So the last episode, the flashbacks were Maceo and Oliver stealing a drug or a – I don't know if it was a drug, something, a chemical.
A biological weapon.
Is that what that stuff is going to turn out to be? It called
I think so,
Omega.
Yeah.
And we discussed how Omega is the final letter in the Greek alphabet, and it means the end. And, of course, that's what happened with Oliver. Well, in this episode, we find out that, Waller was not completely clear on what was going on. Omega, yeah, that's okay that they got Omega, because it doesn't work without its partner, Alpha, which is the first letter in the Greek alphabet, and is used to symbolize, rebirth, right? Death and rebirth. So Oliver and Maceo and a couple other Argus agents have to go and try to get the alpha chemical, which she says they are going to destroy. So my question is, why didn't they just destroy it? Why did they have to bring it back with them? Which they do. And so now the Argus folk have Alpha, and the Triad and Chin Na Wei's people have Omega. And also Tatsu.
I think your description was more complete and thorough than the actual flashbacks were there.
Well, they're just trying to move through. I think it's all MacGuffin kind of stuff, right? It's not.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't
sure.
really matter why we need to have that, except that probably at some point in the future we'll see it pop back up in some fashion. But they've also got Tatsu, who is Maceo's wife. And he's really upset that Waller won't go rescue her. But she's like, I don't know where she is. So Oliver uses the tracking device in the alpha chemical to put it on one of the bad guys, one of the Triad members. So that now, I don't know if this is sound logic, but he says that he's going to lead everybody right back to Tatsu. Which, okay, that's probably true. At least it'll give him an idea of where the Triad base is. And Maceo, tells Oliver that, that was a great thing that you just did, and I will be forever in your debt. They haven't even rescued his wife yet. And all Oliver said is that, he put this tracker on the guy, not like it couldn't fall off or the guy could discover it and destroy it or something like that. And already Maceo is like giving him a life debt.
Okay, so you're saying maybe life debt was a little too severe, maybe
a little too soon.
I'll be 2 weeks in your debt, unless we find her.
Oh,
and then I'll throw another couple months on there.
Yeah, hey, I'll buy you lunch next time you're in town.
Hey, thanks for almost saving my wife. let's go to Burger King.
I will make sure if we rescue my wife that she will make you the best dinner ever. So, I don't know. It just seemed like, okay, so that was the setup as to why did Maceo rescue Oliver.
Right.
Which... There's got to be more to it than that. That seems a little too pat.
Maybe. And we were asking each other last time too. Why bring him to present day,
mm-hmm. and have him join the league? Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So, if this is the only reason why, I can live with all that. I agree with you. It's a bit convenient.
My question still is. I understand why the creators put him at that place, because it's like, okay, it's Oliver, wait, don't I owe him a life debt? Oh my gosh, he's going to be in a fight with this guy, so this would be my time to fulfill that. But, like, why did he join the League of Assassins in the first place? That is, like, for me, that's now a pretty big question, because I think some people might have thought that because of the events that happened in the last episode that Tatsu was killed by Qin Na Wei, but this episode seemed to make it clear that even though there was blood splattered around and the son said she was taken, that is probably the case, right? She was just taken. So, okay, so we didn't know if she was going to, you know, was she going to survive in the flashbacks? Well, we find out this episode that indeed she did survive the flashbacks because she's still alive. But she and Maseo are not together anymore. I had made a prediction last week as to why he, or last episode, as to why he was in the League of Assassins. And it's like, well, if you've got a little boy that you're taking care of because his mother died, you're not going to be going off to be in a league, you know, in an Assassin's League, because you've got to take care of your kids. So I still think the son is not around, which is maybe why that they've split up. But I still don't see
that
joining the league. I don't know.
No, I think that that's a really good speculation. I think it does. It will eventually have something to do with their son. We definitely haven't seen him yet. Not that that would be necessary if he was still around. I mean, but all of those pieces kind of fit together. Why he would go off and join the league, and why we're not seeing him, and you know, what else happened. So, yeah, it was interesting to have him be the one. I don't know why that didn't even occur to me, or maybe it did, but I'd kind of put all these other characters in my mind. Like, that would be wild if it was Thea going to rescue him, or Malcolm, or, you know, something. So
I had a lot of people that I talked to say they thought it would be Malcolm.
That's who I thought it was going to be.
I had said on the last episode of Green Justice that I thought it was going to be Maseo, so I get the points.
Yes,
not that
absolutely.
I'm not keeping score, Josh. Don't.
No,
don't
no, you got the Laurel. No. You got the Laurel points, and you got the Maseo points.
Right.
And
I'm just,
no,
I mean, I'm up 20 to 17, but.
Absolutely. Yep. You're beating me the way, you know, the Modern Family guy beat Stephen Amell on the, on the Kimmel show.
I just think it's cute that you think you could take me.
Yeah. Okay. So, can I say something about these flashbacks real quick?
Yeah.
Because this bothered me in the climb too, and I don't want to focus kind of on the negative aspects of this episode. I thought it was a bit choppy. It wasn't quite the I think you even said the pacing, you know, that I was expecting for, mm-hmm. for the return here.
Right.
More of a,
this is a setup episode, I think, that I agree. There were some pacing issues, some transitional issues I had just cutting between two locations and scenes and stuff.
Well,
like
that's what I wanted to say. So they did this with the climb too. There were these sort of flashback, or I don't even know if that's the appropriate one. They just leaped all over the place in the timeline.
Right. So
they would
do present day. You've got flashback, right? But then you've got present day separate location for other characters. But you're moving from the flashback from a present day Sterling City to the flashback, but then coming back to this other location present day, and you're not sure.
Okay, here are the ones that I counted. Okay, so you had, we'll say flashback to you know, Hong Kong. That was clear. Although I got to tell you, those are too short for me. I think they should make bigger chunks of those and fewer of them.
When they do a flashback to 5 years ago.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't. I don't know. It seemed like maybe they were fitting in better in previous episodes, but whatever.
They
I can
figure
used that
to be
out.
Longer.
That's
they did. Used
that's
to be
easier.
Longer, I would say, yeah.
I think so. That used. I mean, that that's easy to tell if it's a flashback. I mean, Oliver looks different. He's got the longer hair. He's still got the old clothes. Why does Maseo get like the tie and the suit, and Oliver still has to walk around like some, you know, our army vet that's escaped or something? Anyway, yeah. Okay, so those are the flashbacks. Then you got, like you said, you got present day. Okay, so Diggle and Roy and Felicity, they're you know, wondering where Oliver is, this and that, and Thea's wondering where Oliver is, and she asks Malcolm to see what he can do about it. Then you have a flashback to right after the fight with Ra's al Ghul. When Maseo got him off the mountain.
Yep, right.
That had to have been right after the fight. So that would have been, what did you say, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago?
3 days ago that he had gone to fight. So, I mean, it's a
only
few
3 days?
Ago. Yeah. That's what Felicity had said.
I thought she had said longer than that, but I could be wrong. Either way, it's still a flashback to a few days. Then you have Malcolm Merlyn saying, have you heard from Oliver? No. Okay. Well, I'm going to look into it. Then you have him going to wherever that was. The sword's still there. He doesn't see Oliver, but granted, that was a pretty big fall. And I'm assuming Maseo had already taken him. When did Malcolm get there at this location? That seemed like a different time. And then you had him bringing the scimitar back. I don't know. It was very confusing to follow with all of these kind of strange time.
The
jumps.
Travel time for people in this universe from Corto Maltese to Starling City, from Starling City to wherever this fight is taking place, which is not Nanda Parbat. It's
no, it's not.
It's like the Ra's al Ghul's, you know, Western Palace or whatever. I'm assuming it's in Canada someplace because Starling is somewhere in northern Central America. So I'm assuming it's, you know, within a day's travel or less. Because okay, it's interesting you bring that up because this is how I see stuff fitting in. So we've, like you said, Maseo takes the body and he puts it on the travois and drags it to someplace, but it's still within that snowy mountain setting.
Uh-huh.
So Tatsu lives near wherever this fight took place, or he did say something that he had asked her to come. So maybe this was Maseo's place and she was just hanging out inside, but either way, he's not living in the temple area where the league is, where we saw Ra's training in the climb, where he killed all of the where he had the training guys and then killed all of them. So he's got his own little hut. And then Malcolm visits and returns within like a day. So it can't be that far from Starling City, but I mean, where is it? So
yeah, I don't know. Those are all a little convenient. Maybe it's just some bed and breakfast nearby, and you know, Tatsu is just visiting. I don't know. Yeah, that and again, I'm okay with all of the stuff that happened. I'm okay with everything that took place and how they showed us what was going on to progress. It was just it was hard to follow, bouncing back and forth.
They almost need subtitles or you know, location.
Locations, yeah, exactly. But it's fine. I mean, I figured it out. So, I mean, it's obviously not that complicated. It was, the Merlyn stuff was really where I started having to think about it. But usually in the flashbacks, it's pretty clear. Anyway. You know, I'll get over that.
And then we find out that Oliver is actually alive. I was very shocked that they showed him. Well,
were you shocked?
I shouldn't have been shocked because, as we discussed in our last podcast, I mean, to kill off the lead character on a show, you I think you probably want to reassure the audience that you really haven't killed him. But I mean, I seriously thought they were going to go a little bit longer. But you know. I don't think we can assume, like, well, if they don't show it to us, then it's taking a long time. And how do you bring back someone that's been dead for, you know, weeks or whatever? So if like you're saying, the flashback to him pulling Oliver off the mountain was, you know, 3 days ago, basically right after the fight. So we can assume that, you know, right in that same 24-hour period is when Oliver's been rescued and revived, right? So we're still with Oliver. We're still in the past a little bit. Mm-hmm. But Tatsu can, like, raise the dead? She had a miracle pill that she gave him?
Are you assuming he's dead?
I had assumed that, yeah, he was dead. Malcolm said
dead. And why are you believing what Malcolm Merlyn says?
Everybody stop yelling at me.
I don't think he died. I mean, I think he just was very, very, very near death.
Very injured and
frozen. He's just like mostly dead, like yes. we said last time.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, we had been really going Lazarus Pit crazy, I think, and that doesn't appear to be what happened, but they
well, how
they
could
left
you not
really
go Lazarus Pit
too.
Crazy? It's Ra's al Ghul. I mean, why
I
wouldn't
well,
that pop up,
well, I'm not saying
up,
it
right?
wasn't unfounded, and I just... I think, fans were really clamoring, like, oh, let's just get the Lazarus Pit. That is just, you know, that's crazy, outrageous kind of comic book stuff. And, he's okay. She put some stitches in him. She's given him some broth, probably, you know, and...
a nice tea.
He's maybe some chamomile, right? so, you know, he's healing. And granted, you know, it was just kind of the teaser at the end, so we didn't really get a lot of information.
Yeah, we might get more about how this happened. After showing exactly how far he fell, I was actually more concerned about the fall than I was the sword wound.
Yeah, I mean, you saw him fall a little ways in the climb, but then, yeah, when the camera went off over the edge, that was pretty intense. So, anyway, that's... it was just surprising. I just thought that they would... string us along a little bit more, but as the audience, I think it's probably better that we know that Oliver's, let's just say, okay. I mean, we don't know the extent of anything that's happened, right? I mean, it's too early to tell. I mean, he could be out of commission for the rest of the season, potentially. But it gives the audience something to say, okay, well, Oliver's alive, but now we can really enjoy watching what the people back in Starling City have to go through. And unfortunately they're going to all believe that he is, dead, to be able to do whatever they're going to do next. But as Laurel said,
who do you think is going to believe he's dead? Now, are you just talking about Team Arrow and the people that know him? Or do you think that Starling City itself is going to start to notice that he's not around anymore?
Well, I don't think Oliver's been around to notice. You mean the Arrow?
Yeah. Well, both, I guess.
I don't know. They might start. I think next week we'll have the captain notice that, Captain Lance notice that the Arrow's not around because, I mean, he's been pretty tight with him and helping out. And of course, there are all these new.
He hasn't even noticed that his own daughter's not around.
Okay. Well, that's. Yeah, but it's part of his job. I mean, he's been working with the Arrow. And now there are going to be all these bad guys out on the street. That are going to be why are the Glades that people want to take over, by the way? It's this this dump of a neighborhood.
They've got a nice mall.
It's
there's an Orange Julius in there that's really good. I don't know. You know why I think is because I think there's a lot of people in that area that can be controlled. Think about if you were going to kind of have a gang run in an area where it could be profitable and you could feel powerful. You're not going to take over downtown, you know, like a big city downtown. You're going to take over an area where there's a lot of small stuff to be had as opposed to maybe like one big thing.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know. That's my thinking. Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like I guess it's not like the slums, but it's definitely not like the nice part of town.
Yeah.
So I have a complaint about all these bad guys.
Okay.
All that other stuff I wouldn't say complaint. You know, we're just talking. We're just analyzing and breaking it down and saying what struck us in certain ways. But I do have a complaint about this episode. It strikes a personal nerve. Why are so many bad guys bald? What are you saying? I think that's stereotyping.
Well, Brick had a little bit of hair, didn't he?
Yeah, well, a little bit. That's just, you know, he hadn't had time to shave after burning that guy. You know,
my kids want to know why all the bad guys are British. And I'm like, well, they're not, but okay.
It's just because they sound cool. But is he British? He struck me as more of an Australian kind of. I don't know much about that guy, the actor.
Yeah, Vinnie Jones, he played the Juggernaut in X-Men
2,
3. I think it was X-Men 3. I believe he is British. He had played soccer or football, as they call it.
Oh, gotcha.
Before becoming an actor. And he is... he actually has already played a character named Brick. His name was Brick Top. He wasn't Brick Top. There was another actor. But he's starred in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch. The Guy Ritchie films that take place in London. And when I saw that he was going to be on this episode, I was very pleased because I think he makes an excellent bad guy. You totally believe he's tough. And he could take a shot. Now, either I'm surprised that Diggle missed him when he shot him, or...
Ooh, I was just going to ask you this.
The gun is really old and probably not... if he's dropping it on the ground, it may be not aligned properly.
No. I think it's rigged.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, because he used the same gun both times, and, you know, both guys shot him, and it hit him on the right side both times. So I think it's rigged. I think he sets it up to make the guy think he's going to be able to possibly get away, and then they miss because it pulls, right? Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was kind of cool. I didn't think about that until Diggle shot, you know, and he hit him in the head, but it was on the right side of the head, just like when he got hit in the shoulder. So
okay, yeah, yeah, that's good.
So
point.
If you do meet a guy named Brick, aim just to the right of his shoulder.
Yeah. Well, also speaking of Diggle and guns, I loved the scene where Malcolm breaks into the cave and Diggle pulls the gun and he's like, "Can you put that away? It's not so much that I'm scared as it annoys me." And then Diggle immediately pulls a second gun on him. I thought that was hilarious.
That was a good scene with Malcolm in the cave. So, I like that.
Now, do you think Malcolm's really sorry about, you know, he kind of gave this whole speech to Felicity that he truly is sorry and he's guilty and he's got to live with this guilt the rest of his days. And
I think Malcolm wants to believe he's sorry. I think he wants to believe that he feels guilty, but I also think he's crazy. So
certifiably crazy kind of.
Yeah. Like certifiably.
Yeah.
I think he's telling himself that, and he still believes that he's doing the good thing, the right thing, but he's willing to do anything to do it in all aspects of his life, you know, with Thea and everything.
Yeah.
So I maybe misinterpreted his intentions for sending Oliver to Ra's al Ghul. I was thinking maybe by challenging Ra's al Ghul, Malcolm would kind of have his debts cleared. He would be free to live his life. But that was only if Ra's al Ghul died, huh?
So I think he's sorry. And then in parentheses and under his breath, yeah, sorry that Oliver lost, you know, because it's like he hedged his bets and said, well, I think Oliver can take him.
Yeah, I think he really believed he could.
Maybe he did. I mean, obviously he did. I figured it probably was the only choice that he had, like between getting killed and having a chance to have his debts cleared by having Ra's al Ghul killed. This was his best opportunity.
Yeah.
And so he took it. However twisted it was.
It is twisted. He's twisted. He's a guy. I still like that character as over the top as he is sometimes, you know, as Mexican soap opera as he is sometimes.
Right.
I do. He's man, Barrowman plays him so well.
He does a really good job. And do you think he really wants to protect Thea, or is he more just looking out for his own skin?
Well, I don't know what's in it for him now
to keep
what
Thea.
Would be in it for him. Yeah. I mean, what would be in it for him to keep Thea if he didn't really love her?
You know, he's training somebody. Maybe he's training someone to be able to go and fight and kill Ra's al Ghul.
I guess. I mean, yeah, that's a possibility. But yeah. So again, in his twisted way, I think he really does love Thea. I think he sees – now look, think about it like from a Ra's al Ghul point of view. Does Ra's al Ghul really love his children, his daughters? Does he have more? Is it just the two daughters?
Two daughters.
Okay.
Talia and Nyssa.
Nyssa, yeah. But now it's – that's – you know, those are his children. But would he hesitate to use them in a way that might put their lives in danger or even kill them if it serves his overall purposes? I don't think he would. I don't think he would hesitate to use them like that.
Right.
But I still think he loves them. Again, you know, that's a villain point of view.
Right.
But in his own twisted way, I think he really does truly love Thea and want to protect her right now.
Well, being the head of the demon is tough. I mean, you have to make tough choices sometimes, you know? And
you do. You do. It's much easier to be like the demon's toe, the demon's pancreas, things like that. So
That's just bile.
well
so
made.
What else did I want to touch on? Oh, so Ray Palmer, he is hellbent set to continue on working on his ATOM suit. And Felicity's.
Yes. Yes, I'm agreeing with you. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. And
you're beating me in points, so I have to agree with you now.
You don't have to, but that's cool. So Felicity, you know, was helping him and then has decided that she has had too many people die in her life at her young age, that she in basically, I think in good conscience, just cannot, as she says, stand by and watch him commit suicide, which it's a little overdramatic for that. But I also think she thinks that he's just going to be putting on this suit and walking around like, you know, because there's nothing that's been revealed that he's thinking about making the suit, you know, shrink or anything like that.
I was just going to ask you that.
He says something about we need to work smaller, and he hands her this nanotech chip to work on, you know, which
yes.
I think is a veiled innuendo that there will be some shrinking taking place at some point. But no, there's, you know, other than it's
hopefully,
called...
Hopefully just as a superhero.
Right, right. It was shrinkage! It was cold! but, you know, it's called Adam. And so some, you know, obviously people who know the comic book character can, you know, figure out what that means. But there's nothing that's been revealed on the show that it's anything more than just kind of a suit of armor that, you know, has some electronics on it and maybe some weapons or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. If you think it is, does it seem as if it is Ray's intention to make this shrink able to make this suit able to shrink, or is it does he have is it something else? That's what I was wondering about. But
well, I've not been able to intuit any of Ray's intentions so far on the show because he also is just maybe a little crazy, or at least he's thinking so far ahead of everybody else that we just don't understand what his plans are. So possibly his intentions are not to make it shrink, and it may be one of those, you know, accidents that happens as it does with superheroes that, you know, he puts it on and something happens that causes it to shrink. But maybe... maybe it doesn't shrink. Maybe it is just going to be some sort of like super powered armor, you know, like an Iron Man sort of suit in that case.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess I had kind of been assuming that it was going to shrink, but, you know, like I said, there's nothing that's been mentioned about that, and it would be completely within the guise of the producers and writers to go against our expectations for that too.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't know. So, well, I mean, that's
given them lots of different paths to travel that some of which we had kind of predicted, but I think they're going to a lot of different places that we didn't.
Oh, and there is talk now that later in the season on Flash, Felicity and Ray will be guest starring, going over and visiting Star Labs. So factor that into anything you may be thinking about.
Okay. All right. Well, right now I'm thinking about that picture of me and Stephen Amell. So,
well, before you get too far into that, let me just, I was going to mention a couple of references here. There really isn't too much. We've mentioned Danny Brickwell, who is a character from the comics. In the comics, he's a metahuman. I don't think my thought was that he does not have metahuman powers. It's just that he is a physically imposing sort of man. And they call him the Brick because he is like a brick wall, in the same way you would call a giant man tiny. I would think.
Okay.
Would you agree with that? That he's not metahuman?
Yeah, I don't think he's metahuman.
Okay. Interestingly, though, he was. I consulted my screenshots. He was listed in Oliver's dad's journal on the list. We saw that his name was in there. I want to say it's like season one, episode 3 or 4 when we were looking, when Oliver was flipping through the journal. He was on the top of the page.
Now, that shocked me, actually. I'm very surprised by that.
Yeah, I hadn't I don't think I had recognized the name at the time. Or it's, well, I don't know that I was able to read the name. It's obvious now when you tell me, oh, Danny Brickwell's a character on the show. Oh, yeah, I can see that it says Danny Brickwell, but it said Danny, and it's kind of blurry. So it's kind of, and it's cursive, right? So it's kind of hard to tell what it says. But yeah.
But just that they had thought of that character so far back, and probably yeah. in a different way, but then they pulled it back. They didn't have to. I mean, they right. could have used something else, right? I just think that's cool.
Yeah. So, no references to like the number 52 or anything else that
so you know what that means.
What does that mean?
That means that Oliver is the one that's putting all these references in here. And see, now that he is gone, now that he is, you know, out for the count right now, we're not going to get any references.
Oh, all right.
That's just a theory.
Okay, well, we'll see if that holds true next week on Arrow. So, well, I hope you guys enjoyed our show. That was all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it, too. And if you did, you could leave us some feedback on iTunes. We would love to hear from you. And, you know, speaking of hearing from you, you can contact us personally. I think it's personal, isn't it? I mean, you and I look at it. I mean, it's not like our secretaries look at it. Or anything,
no. We read every piece of email that comes in.
Absolutely. We love it. Our email is greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or you can play with us over on Twitter @greenjusticepod. As soon as I get that picture with Stephen Amell, I'll post it there. And our Facebook page is, of course, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
Dear Green Justice, please send me a picture of Josh and Stephen Amell.
So you can also check out
that too.
You can also check out the other shows that Josh and I host here. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is actually covering the Agent Carter series presently, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, both available via randomchatter.com. You can also find all shows available on the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.